This is Susie Larson. I want to thank you today for downloading this podcast from Live the Promise. I do hope you enjoy it. Thanks also for your continued support of Faith Radio. I want you to know you can donate anytime by clicking on the Support Faith Radio tab. Have a great afternoon, and God bless you. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. And we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. Really glad you tuned in today. Happy Friday, and I hope you've had a great week and are looking forward to a great weekend. Well, we've got, again, one of our favorites. We have kind of a lot of favorites, Tim, don't we?
Yes, we do.
But so many great people that have passed through this show, and Dr. Greg Smalley is no stranger. We love him. He's funny. He's got great content. So we look forward to chatting with him in just a moment about his book, The Wholehearted Marriage, Fully Engaging Your Most Important Relationship. You are in for a treat. No matter how long you've been married, no matter how much you think, I got this, there's always more we can do to move towards our spouse, move towards God, and strengthen our marriage, wouldn't you say?
I would agree with you completely. And one of the things I love about Greg is he is a fabulous storyteller. Mm-hmm. And he always uses his stories to illustrate a point. But, you know, he's gotten in some of the weirdest situations.
Yeah. So you're going to laugh, but you're going to be taught at the same time. You're going to enjoy it. Real quickly, tomorrow I'm going to be in Albert Lea speaking at Crossroads Church for the Beyond Belief Conference. And it's just one day, 9 to 2:30. So if you want to join us, go to my Facebook page and you'll get the information there. I would love to see you. Facebook.com/deeperlifeinchrist. Again, Facebook.com/deeperlifeinchrist. Well, we're talking about marriage and what it means to have an all-in marriage. And we're so blessed to welcome back to the show Dr. Greg Smalley. Let me tell you about him and we'll get him on the show. Dr. Greg Smalley serves as Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. He develops and oversees initiatives that prepare individuals for marriage, strengthens and nurtures existing marriages, and helps couples in marital crisis. Prior to joining Focus, Greg worked for the Center of Relationship Enrichment at John Brown University and as president of the National Institute of Marriage. He's the author of 11 books, including The DNA of Relationships, The DNA of Parent and Teen Relationships, and The Wholehearted Marriage. Married 19 years, Greg and Aaron live in Colorado with their three daughters, Taylor, Maddie, Annie, and their son, Garrison. The Smalleys, who with the help overcame their own struggles together early on, make it a point to study a marriage book together every Christmas. That's wonderful. Greg, welcome to the show. Glad to have you with us again today.
Hey, thanks, Susie. It's good to be with you, even though I'm snowed in.
I know, and I know you mentioned before the show you're kind of a little bitter about that.
I know, because I got all ready to go to work. I was ready to hit the day to only find out that they were closed. So at least I didn't have to drive over there.
That's right. So what are you going to do with your day today?
Well, we actually agreed to watch two toddlers for some friends of ours for the next couple of days, and so
Here
we are kind of snowed in with, we've got three toddlers and the rest of the kids in the house, and just before the radio show, the three toddlers came up to me and said, can we take you outside and hit you with snowballs? Oh, you saved me. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. No wonder you were so ready to go to work.
You know, people may just listen to think that you're just giving good advice, but you're saving people.
That's
literally.
Right. You literally.
Injury.
That's so funny. Well, we like to start out all of our interviews talking scripture, and you chose Hebrews 13:4, and the first part of it is marriage should be honored by all. Talk to us about that verse.
You know, it's my very favorite marriage verse in the Bible. You know, I just love it because of the idea that, you know, marriage was God's idea. It's his design. He created this. You know, the Bible starts off with a marriage. It ends in a marriage. You know, the Christ talks about the church being the bride. And, you know, just marriage is throughout the Bible. But yet, I tell you, in our culture today, you know, marriage, I don't think, is being honored. You know, our marriages are under assault from the political standpoint to just, you know, how do we honor our own marriage and how do we keep it strong? And so I love the thought of every day. I mean, I don't do this every day, but I wish I did. But what would it be like if we woke up every day saying, what am I doing to honor my marriage today? And that's just why I love that verse, because I love the thought of honor, you know, cherishing something high value, seeing it as a priceless treasure. I think King Solomon said in Proverbs that a man's greatest treasure is his wife. And that's why I just love that notion that we need to be about figuring out how do we honor our marriages.
You know, as I was typing my notes up for today, and I looked at that, marriage should be honored by all. You know, there was that obvious interpretation that we should apply it, that we honor our own marriages. But I did, just like you said, step back from a bigger context, bigger perspective, and thought, what if we honored the whole idea of marriage? What if people who aren't married honored marriage? And I just spoke at an event this last weekend, and a woman came up to me and said that this woman pursued her husband and he pursued her, and obviously she didn't honor the marriage and he didn't honor the marriage, and this woman, this wife, is left with three kids, so brokenhearted because marriage wasn't honored. And so there's so much to be said about that, isn't there?
It really is. I think it'd be fair to say that we have a culture that probably dishonors, you know, marriage, and that's why, you know, I love with the focus on the family. I mean, others, we're just saying, hey, let's, you know what, we can't fix everything, but what if we started by saying, how can we bring back honor to its rightful place of honor that God created? Let's just start there. And that's why I'm excited. I just love that verse.
I do, and I love what you're doing too, Greg, because I'm convinced that as marriages are strengthened, communities are strengthened. And my hubby and I, every 10 weeks, talk to kids in our community who've committed their first crime. And that this is their option, to go through this little program or to go before the judge. And the brokenheartedness in them because of the brokenness in the marriages is just staggering. I don't think we have any idea the ripple effect of what broken marriages cause. So that's just amazing. Well, you shared this last
time. I would choose you over jail, too, by the way. So
you choose. Oh, yeah. That's so sweet. You want to talk with me, or you want to go to the man in the black robe?
Yeah, anyway. Let me think about that for a second. We choose you.
Oh, well, you shared this story last time you were on the show, but just in case others missed it, it's just the best. I want you to talk about how you and your wife met.
You know, we met our sophomore year at Grand Canyon University. And I saw her around campus a few times, just thought she was hot. You know, I wanted to meet her, didn't work up the courage. Ended up, we took the same class. It was an Old Testament theology class. I was sitting in front of her one day, and as the professor lectured, because, by the way, I'm such a great student, I fell sound asleep. Really, it's kind of sad. But, you know, midway, I'm sleeping peacefully. Well, Aaron, who I... stranger to me, I didn't know her, she literally wakes me up, tells me that the professor just called on me. I'm supposed to stand up. And so I'm going, to do what? And she says, you know, she kind of whispers, he just called on you to pray. Stand up quick and pray. And again, why would a complete stranger make this up?
Because I mean, she's watching out for you, isn't she, Greg?
Exactly. And so I stood up from the back of this huge classroom and started to pray out loud. And people are looking at me and laughing, and, you know, I'm not sure what was going on, but I finished praying. Now the whole class is laughing. My friends are on the ground slapping the floor, and the professor goes, you know, Greg, great prayer. It was very inspiring, but he goes, maybe next time you could let me finish lecturing before you close the prayer.
I love this
could
woman.
Be the meanest thing I've ever heard in my life. But that was the moment that I knew that, that's the girl I'm going to marry someday. I'm going to teach her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you met your match in that one, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'll have the last laugh here.
That's so funny. Well, what I love about your ministry and your message even is your honesty about your struggles, it's like on the ground training for the rest of us as we read your work. And so if you wouldn't mind sharing some of the struggles that you overcame in those early years of marriage.
Yeah, you know, Susie, for us, you know, we loved each other. We were committed Christians. I was in seminary at the time. And yet, I tell you, for us, it was really the way that we tried to sort of work through our differences and manage our conflict. It really came down to we just didn't know how to argue. And we did it in such a way that just every time it happened, it would just leave us both feeling so utterly dejected and it just felt so negative. It was horrible. Lots of good things, but the conflict just got worse and worse, to the point where I really thought that we were one more argument away from her leaving. And it was by the grace of God that there was a couple who we'd gotten to know that kind of said, you know, as we're watching you guys, it looks like you're in a little bit of trouble. And we kind of looked at each other and went, is it that obvious?
Hmm.
And then broke down. And they began to mentor us. We got into counseling. We began to really learn how to work through conflict. And that's why I tell you, one of my things that I'm most passionate about as far as just helping couples understand that whereas a lot of us avoid conflict, I mean, there was a season we just avoided any sort of conflict like the plague because it ended so awful for us. And yet the reality is that conflict, if managed in a healthy way, is truly the doorway to intimacy. In other words, when you walk through and talk through differences, you learn more about your spouse, what they feel, what they need, what they're dreaming, thinking about. I mean, all these things, if you're willing to walk through that. A good friend of mine, Gary Oliver, said that conflict is the price we pay for intimacy. And when I heard him first say that, I thought he was, you know, had some sort of psychological problem. I mean, who would say that? You know, it sounded wrong to me. And yet, you know, the more that I've understood this, it truly is. There's an intimacy, a connection that we can gain when we face conflict. And so, as a matter of fact, I just turned in a manuscript. It's called Fighting Your Way to a Better Marriage. With
love
the sort
it.
Of notion that conflict can be such a good thing and we shouldn't avoid it. And yet, you know, I know that many, many do, sadly.
Well, you know, we talked about this just yesterday on the show, the difference between keeping the peace and being a peacemaker, peacemaker versus peacekeeper. And I know for me, the times when we've had conflict, my hubby and I, when I'm really humble and teachable, it's in those places where I just see more of my need for Christ and where I become more like Christ. And as you said, when you get through the other side, you're that much stronger, aren't you?
I mean, seriously, I've learned the best things I've ever learned about her, as I look back, I think happened because we were in some sort of disagreement and made it through. And I found out, okay, oh, I see. So this is what you need, or this is what you're really thinking, or this is how you really were feeling. I've never heard that before. And it's sort of like looking for buried treasure, you know, in kind of a strange way. If you're willing to keep digging and going through this, you'll find just some amazing relational treasure, if you're willing to face it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate in the Wholehearted Marriage how you talk about the need to feel safe within marriage. And the obvious interpretation would be physical safety. And, of course, that's important. But you're talking about something even more profound and deep that many Christian couples I don't think ever experience. So talk about what you mean.
Yeah, I don't think that most people realize the true net effect of conflict. Because what happens when we argue and fight in ways that, you know, don't feel good, or we withdraw or we avoid or whatever it is, what happens in the end is that our hearts will shut down. When you argue and fight with someone, you know, you get upset, you get angry, you get hurt, your heart closes. Over time, the true danger is that your heart may harden. That's even why Jesus said that, you know, well, Moses permitted you to divorce because of the hardness of your heart. And so I just never knew that. You know, I knew that when Aaron and I fought and were upset with each other, there was sort of this real disconnection. I just didn't understand that what was going on is that my heart was closing. And the good news is that when people feel safe with each other, that your heart will naturally open and intimacy just happens. And that's why figuring out how to create a home that feels like the safest place on earth. In other words, how do we go through conflict in a way that feels safe to both people? And again, yeah, like you were saying, I'm not talking about physical safety. It's really more emotional safety. That's because when I feel safe with my wife, I feel that she accepts who I really am, my deepest thoughts and feelings and hopes and dreams. I mean, all that deep stuff that she unconditionally accepts me for who I am. That's when you feel safe with someone. You don't have to worry, hey, if I share this thought or this opinion or this feeling that you're going to judge me or criticize me or, you know, mock me or whatever. And that's what I love about this idea of safety is that, you know, when we fight, it feels very unsafe. We shut down, our hearts close, but yet the way out of that is to figure out then how do we really be safe with each other. And that is what Aaron and I have learned over the years. And it's not easy. I tell you, it's something that every couple can do, is to learn how to make a home, make your marriage feel like the safest place on earth. I mean, what a great goal.
Absolutely. Well, I'm talking to Dr. Greg Smalley today about his book, The Wholehearted Marriage, Fully Engaging Your Most Important Relationship. Maybe you've got a question for our guest today, 877-933-2484, 1-877-933-2484, otherwise Susie@faithradionet.com. You know, it's so important when you think about safety within marriage that it takes maturity for one spouse, like as you say, Aaron, to love you just as you are right now. I'm so mind-boggled that God is with us in process. He allows us to be in process, but we don't seem to allow each other to be in process. And so it's almost like if I accept you now, it's meaning, you know, I'm giving up on some of the things I want to see out of your life. But it takes great maturity to say, I accept that we are both works in progress. Say more about that.
Well, you know, what I like what you're saying, that there is a way in which we can accept each other, but that doesn't mean that we don't have, you know, hopes and expectations and that we stop growing and learning, you know, but there's a way in which that when, you know, when my wife needs to talk about something, share her feelings, I always have to keep in my mind, what am I going to do right now to try to help her to feel safe so that she keeps sharing, that her heart stays open. Because it's at that heart level, that's what I really want to hear. And that's not easy to do. And so I know I heard one time, I think it was Teddy Roosevelt said, it's a great quote, he said that people don't care what you know until they know that you care. Mm. And that little quote, I swear to you, Susie, has probably had as big a profound effect on my marriage than anything else I can think of. Because I'm the kind of guy that, man, I think I know everything. You know, I have lots to share, and, you know, I've been a professor before, and, you know, and I teach for a living, you know, and yet with my kids and with my wife, you know, my natural tendency is to lecture, to impart knowledge. Hey, did you think about this? You know, my wife would, you know, share, hey, I got hurt today. A friend of mine said something, and I instantly would know exactly, you know, what she needed to do to fix it. And so I was more than willing, because I loved her so much, to, you know, to show her what she needed to do, because we have a whiteboard at home, and I just write it all out. Which, could you imagine?
She appreciates completely.
I think she would kill me, actually, yeah. If I ever did that. But, you know, I mean, that was my tendency, is to lecture, is to teach, to share what I know, long before someone ever felt cared for. And that's why I have to remind myself, I mean, because I'm an idiot, you know, this stuff doesn't come natural to me. And I have to remind myself when my wife is talking or my kids are talking, hey, Smalley, shh, just don't tell them how they can fix it, solve it, what they need to do differently, what you know, until they really feel that you care. And that's why, you know, for me, one of my very favorite stories in the Bible is you remember the shortest verse in the Bible, you know, Jesus wept?
Mm-hmm.
That whole story where, you know, when Jesus goes to see Lazarus, finds out that he's died, his family's weeping, wailing, you know, in grief, and yet Jesus knew that he was going to raise him from the dead. I mean, I'm convinced of that. Right. I don't think that was like an impulsive, hey, you know what, actually, why don't I just bring him back to life? You know, I mean, I think that he knew that. It was all part of the plan. And it's that's why that verse, Jesus wept, has always intrigued me, because I thought, all right, so you know that you're going to marvel this group of people with this amazing miracle of bringing back Lazarus from the dead. Why did you weep with this family? Why didn't you say, hey, it's Jesus, it's me, I got this, just watch. You're going to see like the coolest thing ever here in 5 minutes, you know, so quit crying. I mean, that's probably what I would have said, which is why not Christ, which is good for everybody. But, you know, it's always, I thought if it was me, I would have tried to solve it, show them how I was going to fix it. But what I love is that Christ modeled, you know what, before I do anything, I'm going to hurt with, I'm going to empathize with this family and show them that I care. Because I think when we care for someone, it opens their heart to us. Now they're ready to hear maybe whatever it is that we want to tell them. But I really think that's step number one, is you've got to care for someone.
I really like that, because oftentimes when we have been hurt, when we get to the other side of that an initial moment, we can sometimes even figure out what to do, but we just need that moment, and blessed are those who weep with those who weep. So that's really a great thought. Well, I don't mean to keep bringing up all the bad things you did in the book, but I want to bring up another story.
You and my wife, like, you're a team.
Yes, we talked before the show. But anyway, but this story. What's that?
Oh, I said, yeah, she always says, yeah, be sure to ask him this.
Yeah, right. But no, this story is important because I want to ask on both sides of it. But there's a story in the book about your wife wanting to surprise you with this antique, I think it was a basketball. Remember that story? Would you mind telling that story?
Yes, I'm so glad you brought this one up. Man, it's such a shiny moment in my life.
Sorry.
All right. I have a little bit of a problem. I had a little bit of a problem, I should say. You know, there was, you know, conflict around money is such a big thing for so many couples, right? I mean, the research always says number one conflict in marriage is, you know, around money. And, you know, for Aaron and I, it was no different. When we would talk and try to talk about money, oftentimes I would walk away feeling totally controlled. You know, that she wants to tell me how to spend my money. She wants to know, you know, she wants to talk about everything, whatever. And so, unfortunately, instead of working this out with her, I sort of rationalize in my mind, well, you know, when I make a few extra bucks or have a few extra bucks, I'm just going to kind of keep that from her. And so I would hide this in a tennis can, no lie, in my basement. And it wasn't a huge sum of money, but when there would be no fight. See, then I wouldn't have to ask for permission. We wouldn't get in this argument. And it was horrible, terrible idea. Stupid. I don't know why I thought that this was a good idea, but I did it. Until someone, our neighbors, literally came over to ask my wife, hey, we're going to go play tennis. Do you have any tennis balls we can borrow? And so my wife went down and said, yeah, I think Greg has some in the basement. So she brings these tennis balls out. And of course, gave it to the people. They came back in like 15 minutes saying, hey, you know what? There are actually no balls in here, but there's like a lot of money. And you should probably hold on to this. And so when I got home, my funny, great sense of humor wife is sitting on the couch in a little tennis get-up saying, hey, I want to go play tennis today. And of course, she's holding the tennis can. And see, I was going to use that money to buy this antique basketball that I really wanted. And so she had called this person to actually get it for me as well, and had found out that I had already bought it, and she didn't know about it. And so this all kind of came together this day. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, it there was an opportunity for us to have this great conversation about, you know, what was going on and what I did. But the thing I'll never forget is how much the trust was broken between us. Yeah, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I was like, hey, Aaron, this isn't a whole bunch of money. I mean, this is a little bit of money. But wow, it shocked me at how much how long it took me to really rebuild that trust. But it had everything to do with then going, okay, so in this situation with money, how do I now make this safe for her? Because one, Aaron doesn't really trust me right now, and I want to really rebuild that trust. And so I would ask her, you know, what can I be doing? And it was hard. It was not easy. You know, I hated that she would question if money looked like it was missing or she couldn't, you know, whatever. And it was a really painful season of our marriage, but... You know what I so value about that time is just, I think, all the things we learned. You know, now as we look back, and it's still embarrassing. You know, I still hate that I was sort of sneaking and hiding money from my wife, and, you know, buying stuff that without her permission, that kind of thing. But there's a way in which now we look back and having walked through that, We see some things that we've learned and are stronger because of it. So.
And Greg, I appreciate you telling that. I truly didn't at all mean to throw you under the bus, but my interest in that story was your patience in the book your patience with rebuilding that wall, because so often you hear spouses say, I said I was sorry, or what's the big deal? But, you know, you really went the extra mile to rebuild, and you were so patient with her process. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I think, and I tell you, you know, that I had to, I mean, it was hard. I mean, it exactly as you said, I mean, I wanted her to get over it, to move beyond it. I said, oh, sorry, I made it right. You know, can't we move on? Why can't you trust me? Why do you have to keep questioning, you know, purchases and bank account discrepancies, whatever? And yet someone finally said, Greg, every time Aaron says something like that, if you can instantly just see that it's not about you, it's about her fear. And if you can go after the fear and care about that in that moment, she feels afraid. Because I thought that this whole forgiveness thing and we would get over this thing sort of in a linear way. And yet what I've learned about situations like that is that, man, it can be 6 months down the road. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything could have been great. And then something can happen and it can trigger, you know, almost like a PTSD reaction. It can trigger memories. It can trigger experiences to where your spouse needs to then talk about that. And if I say, hey, this is over, I apologize, we're not talking, you miss this chance to go after their heart.
I got to jump in. I'm so sorry. We have a hard break. We're going to be back in a minute more with Dr. Greg Smalley. Sorry about that, Greg.
Oh, no problem.
Thanks so much for staying with us. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. We have as our special guest, Dr. Greg Smalley, talking about his book, The Wholehearted Marriage. We invite you to chime into the conversation, maybe ask our guest a question today, 877-933-2484, 1-877-933-2484. Otherwise, Susie at faithradionet.com. You can send me an email. So appreciate that story. And I was thinking two things. I love that you said that not to take it personal, but to go after the fear, because that helps you separate what's really going on. But on the flip side, Greg, what if a spouse is milking it? You know what I'm saying? Is making the other spouse pay? How do you discern when and what to do with that?
I think there's two things. Is that if you recognize that this keeps coming up over and over and over, and you can't seem to forgive, you know, I think what it's showing is that there's probably a way in which you are so afraid of getting hurt again that you're just not you're unable to let go of that. And whenever someone is unwilling to let go of something, I always tell them that, you know, the key is to figure out how do you learn how to take great care of your own heart. I think that most of us grow up in families that where no one ever taught us what to do with pain and heartache. What do we do when we get really hurt by someone? You know, we're taught often to stuff it, you know, we're not taught to do anything. And I watch people, they just don't know what to do with hurt. And so they hold on to these hurts to go, if I let go of this and forgive you, you're going to forget and you're going to end up hurting me again. And I can't go through this pain ever again. And yet for that person, the key is to go, you know, God, teach me, how do I begin to learn how between you and me, how do we heal my own heart? How do I learn to feel confident that when I'm hurt, I know what to do? Because, Susie, I tell you, you know what? When Aaron hurts me, you know, as much as I love it when she makes that right and she cares for me, the bottom line is I know what to do to heal my own heart. I've learned that over the years. But I tell you what, I had no clue to do that. So I always look to Aaron to make me feel better. You've got to change. You've got to demonstrate. You've got to do this. So that I feel safe, so that I feel okay. And that's a terrible place to be in. But if my well-being is dependent upon my wife, you know, that's talking about never feeling safe. And so there's a way in which for that person, they can't forgive, can't let go. They really need to spend some time maybe with a counselor, with their pastor, with a friend, with the Lord, saying, how do I learn really how to take good care of myself first and foremost? Jesus said, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love others as you love yourself. And I think that as you love yourself part is really us learning how to take care of our hearts and keep our hearts open. I think that's what we're trying to do in this earth. Mm-hmm. This is not easy.
No, definitely not. So what are some practical steps you take, Greg, to care for your heart after it's been wounded or broken in some way?
You know what? I think the big thing that we've been taught to do as Christians, I don't know why, but we tend to avoid stuff, repress, marginalize, minimize our emotions. You know, we just throw them away, put them aside, stuff them down deep. And that's the worst thing that we can do. You know, emotions are God-given. God gave us these to show us that there's something going on. We need to pay attention to that. Emotions really are a great source of information. And so I think one of the ways that we learn how to take great care of our hearts is the emotions is really the voice of our heart. And so we've got to be aware of and pay attention to and sort of acknowledge our emotions. You know, there's been research, Susie, that talks about that when we're upset, when you put a name to how you're feeling, it relaxes you. It's kind of like, do you ever go to the grocery store and your husband or hubby, as you call him, you know, tells you, yeah, you got to get these 10 things. And if you don't write them down, then you have to say them over and over and over and over again. But in the same way, if we don't acknowledge our emotions and put them out there, then our bodies will remind us again and over, and we can't let go of that. And so just on a real simple way, just starting to value your emotions, honor your emotions, just by putting a name to it. I'm feeling hurt. I'm feeling rejected. I'm feeling like a failure. I'm feeling unloved, you know, disrespected. Whatever it is, that is a huge part. We've watched that calms people down. And then what you do is you take those emotions to the Lord, and you say, God, now, what is the truth here? I feel this way, but you tell me what is actually the truth. And that's what I love about, you know, God gave us the Holy Spirit, called him the Spirit of Truth. You know, and when we go to the Lord with how we feel, he's going to show us and help us with what is true. Because we have a God who will always weep with us, who will always love us, who cares about how we feel, but wants, more importantly, to tell us what's the truth. And then you will know the truth, as it says in John, and the truth will set you free. And so I think just those two things, putting a name to how you feel, taking those feelings to the Lord, that alone is a great way to learn how to deal with this pain and heartache in this world.
And it really is then about putting your hope in God and removing, you know, your spouse from being a source to God being the source. You know,
absolutely, because I think, you know, psychology, quote unquote, you know, sort of makes it that, you know, well, we embrace our emotions and, you know, we are the truth. And, you know, it's about figuring out how you feel. Let God then tend to those, that part of our heart, and deal with those emotions and to reveal his perfect truth. Because, see, Satan wants to convince us of lies. He wants lies written on our heart that shut us down, but God wants our hearts free. And the only, again, way I know to do that is to go to him and actually to ask him what is true.
Mm. And that is definitely a message for both men and women. I love the story in your book where you and your co-author, Sean Stover, am I saying his name right?
We're
going,
okay, perfect.
Going before some Army Rangers, and you're about to go address these guys, and he whispers, "Don't forget, these are trained killers. Now go, have at it."
Yeah,
that was hilarious.
About to do a seminar, and the commander gets up and says to this group of hardened, you know, special forces guys, you know, "Hey, we got these two speakers and they're talking about marriage, but I don't want you guys getting soft on me, you know. So hey, let me bring up the first speaker." And Sean kind of pushes me up there. So, yeah, it's very fun.
And don't look them in the eye, he says. They're trained killers. Have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Not a good idea ever.
But your message to them, to these trained killers, these tough guys, was that they needed to engage their hearts. And so say a word to men about that, because it's so easy to relegate the emotions to women. But men have emotions, men have pain, and they're not going to have a good marriage unless they identify some of those things.
You know, and sadly, we're taught as men that, you know, real men don't cry. You know, we're taught to stuff our feelings. We're taught to ignore them. And then we go into our relationships, and so we don't know what to do with our own emotions. And so certainly I wouldn't know what to do with Aaron's emotions. Boy, when my wife would get emotional, I just would stare at her and just, you know, blink. you know, dumbfounded, like, what do you want me to do about it? And so I'd try to get her laughing or try to solve or fix it, and we'd end up with this argument, and it never made sense to me. And so I started to learn that, you know what, actually, yeah, people don't care what you know until they know that you care. And I think the only way is, guys, that we can care is your own emotions have to matter. And God gave us these things. We feel, men have feelings too, even if we're not aware of them. They're there. And yet, sadly, it seems like the only acceptable emotion in our culture for men is what? Is anger. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so many guys channel their emotions and their hurt and their frustration through anger. And you know, it's so destructive. And that's why I think as guys, instead of ignoring how we feel, I think one of the best gifts that we can give our family is the gift of our heart, the gift of our emotions. And there was a movie a number of years ago that I can't think of the name of it, but this brother and sister kind of got sucked into this 50s, you know, television show. And I can't remember the name of it. It was all black and white. And then over the course of the movie, because of these two human beings introduced into this fictional TV show with all their imperfections and whatever, their emotions, it started to turn into color. And that's what I started to realize in my own life, is that as a guy, I just felt like, man, I was living in a black and white world because my heart wasn't in it. You know, my emotions weren't there. And yet now, you know, the world is in color in many ways, because as guys, we're always going to do great with our brain. We're always going to be able to think our way through. But what if we also include our heart, our emotions? I just think that both of those things together, heart and of mind, is just a potent combination. And that's what I hope for guys.
Absolutely. And you talk about in the book, the heartless marriage, the half-hearted marriage, and the wholehearted marriage. And I don't know, but I'm guessing the half-hearted marriage would be the guy who's like, okay, I need to validate my wife's emotions. But the wholehearted marriage to me would be, and she needs to validate mine. I mean, you're not just here as men to validate and come around our emotions, but to really get in touch with what you need, because you're the other half of the marriage, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's why I love the idea of wholehearted something. You know, a wholehearted marriage means that both a wife and a husband are engaged in care about what's going on with the other person. I mean, their emotions are in it. They're using their brains. I mean, all that. I mean, all of who we are, our spirit, our soul, our body, our mind, I mean, all of it is engaged. And again, that's why I love the greatest commandment. You know, God gave us the blueprint right there of what it means to be wholehearted. Your heart, your emotions, your soul, that spiritual relationship, your mind, and your body. And I think if we can enter in and sort of put all of that into our marriage, you know, that's how we honor marriage, just to come full circle of what we were talking about in the beginning, you know, that marriage should be honored by all. Well, how I honor my marriage is I show up with a whole heart and just let God do what he designed marriage to do.
Yeah, so good. You know, in the story, in your book, you tell a story about a guy named Sam. And all of a sudden, his wife shocks him. They have three sons, and she's like, I want a divorce. And he comes to you or Sean, one of you guys, and is like, I don't know what hit me. I've been providing. And he thought he was loving her by being faithfully working his tail off. I cannot tell you, as a women's conference speaker, how many times I've heard this story where the husband's, and that insults her more, because she's like, I've been telling you for years you're not engaged with me. And now that the woman's heart is shut down. Describe that scenario and how a couple gets there.
You know, it's just what happens over time is that when the hurt begins to build up, the expectations, you know, go unfulfilled, when we get the conflict happening, I mean, just when we stay busy. You know, what's interesting, in the Chinese written language in Mandarin, the word for business, the symbol for business is made up of two other words. It's heart and death. And so even being busy is sort of a heart death. And when I'm exhausted and worn out and busy, I mean, I shut down. And so when all these things are taking place, you know, our heart begins to close. And over time, the real kiss of death to a marriage is a hardened heart. And so, sadly, for a lot of women, they're recognizing that, you know what, we're disconnected. This isn't going well. You know, my heart is closing. And, you know, for so many guys, it's, well, I'm doing my job. I'm providing. You know, I'm a protector. You know, what more do you want from me? And so, you know, this isn't, I don't think it's natural for us as guys to know really how to also put our whole heart into our relationship, because we didn't have it modeled. You know, like we're saying, you know, we had a real men don't cry. I mean, we don't know what this looks like to care. You know, that's why it cracks me up that Teddy Roosevelt was the one that said, you know, people don't know what you don't care what you know until they know that you care. And yet, for so many guys, they reach this place to where finally their wife just walks away and her heart is hardened. And they're like, whoa, what happened? And yet that's the point where they have an opportunity to say, you know what? What I need to learn to do is, how do I get my heart into this relationship? And prayerfully, it's not too late. And that's what's so amazing about our wives, is that we often, you are so great at it's giving us grace, and over and over and over and over again as we try to learn these things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I sadly see this for a lot of women as well. I think for a lot of women, what I notice that they struggle with is that although you guys are allowed to feel, you know, emotions are sort of culturally accepted for you to have, but what I notice is that when women talk about how they feel, what typically takes place is that people totally invalidate how you feel. And so for so many women, they've been constantly told that their feelings don't matter, that they're wrong, that's a stupid way to feel, it's just your time of the month. You know, this incredible invalidation of how you feel, that for a lot of women, they fight so hard. They don't feel validated. They don't know how to validate their own feelings. And so their hope is that their spouse, their husband, will somehow value their feelings, because they don't know how to do that. And that's usually what I try to encourage women to do, is to say, you know what, actually, your feelings matter, just because that's your heart. Mm. Let that matter to you. Let that matter to the Lord. Even if your spouse won't do it, if your husband can't value how you feel, you and the Lord can always do that, and that is a good thing.
Wow, good word. Would you say, for a man who's listening right now going, okay, how do I do this? How do I engage in my marriage? I've been the provider. I've been running, but I know that I can see in the countenance, on her countenance, she doesn't think I'm engaged. Would his first steps be to ask her, what can I do? Can I take my cues from you, my wife? Or what advice would you give him?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's dead on. You know, because the good news is that I'm living with the world's foremost marriage expert in my marriage, and that's my wife. All I ever have to do is to ask her, you know what, hey, I know that maybe things haven't been going great, you know, but what are one or two things, if I started doing them now, you know, or give me a list of some things that, what could I do that would improve our marriage? My dad used to talk and teach that women have a built-in marriage manual. And I always used to think, well, what about the guy? I mean, don't we know stuff? You know, I mean, I think we know stuff. But I tell you, women just seem to have this incredible intuition around what is needed to have a great marriage. And, you know, just the other day, my wife said, you know, hey, we need to talk. And I always love that when she says that to me, because I'm like, oh, guy, you know, what I do this time. Write it down, add it to the list.
Sorry. I'll say it right now.
You know, and yet, it's so my first instinct as a guy is to defend myself, you know, to say, hey, whoa, you're not Ms. Perfect either. And as a matter of fact, I have a list. I've been meaning to share it somewhere. I don't know where it is, but I'll get it out. You know, I mean, versus what if that I remembered that she just tends to have an intuition to where she can often bring things up before they're big problems and that we can work through. But it's hard for me. Mm-hmm. I don't like to be wrong, and I don't like to feel I've made mistakes, and it makes me feel like a failure. You know, when she says, we need to talk, and yet, I tell you, she usually is right on. Her intuition is usually straight on, if I'm willing to accept that. As a matter of fact, there was a researcher named John Gottman that found that one of the highest predictors of success in a marriage is if a man will accept his wife's influence.
Wow.
I wanted to kill him for finding that. You know, it's like, Great. One more thing. Yes. Show her that she's right.
But, okay, yeah. I'm just thinking about something, Greg, as you're talking. It's almost like God's put these divine roles in men and women. Like the woman is the watchtower. God, because we can multitask, we can see a big picture at the same time while we're doing an up close and personal thing. But God has made guys compartmentalized, and they're stellar in the moment and keeping your nose to the grindstone. And so if we could really honor each other's roles, we could be so strong, because we as women need to give you men room to be in the moment and give you room and time to switch gears and not think that's because you're not able to think on more things than one. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, to value your husband's ability to solve problems, to provide, to protect. The other night, once again, you know, my wife hears these noises in the middle of the night. I mean, this happens all the time. You know, she'll wake me up, hey, I heard a noise. And I'll say, hey, I'm sorry, excuse me. No, not you. You know, there's someone in our house. There's an intruder. You know, and she's always, you know, go check. And I always tell her, what am I going to do? Show up in my boxers and ask the intruder with a gun, hey, tell me how you're feeling today. Tell me about your heart. You look like you're hurting. You're here in my home, you know? And I'm like, let me die here in bed with you. If we're going to die, let me be next to you, for crying out loud. But, you know, I'll get up and I'll check. Hey, the other night, literally, to play a joke on me, she sends me off, you know, to check the house, and I don't see anything, come back. I'm about to get in my bed. She lays on the side of my bed, thinking it's really funny. It's 3 a.m. As I go to step in bed, she screams bloody murder and grabs me, pulls me down. So I'm thinking that the intruder's under my bed and it's back there. You know, I'm telling her, honey, I love you. I'll see you in heaven. You know, it was her.
I love
and,
this
you know,
moment.
After I went and changed my shorts and came back to bed, you know, I love it when she does things like that. So I've never felt more loved, oddly, in all my life.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Oh, I love this woman. Oh, my
God. That's honoring what I do in as a protector.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wonder if you agree with this, but I think women are pretty easy to sweep off their feet. You can sweep a woman off her feet if you just speak her language and know her heart. I mean, I think there's probably so many marriages on the brink that it wouldn't even take a whole ton of effort to change things around, don't you think?
Oh, I agree completely. As a matter of fact, for every man listening, write this verse down, Ephesians 5:29. If you want to sweep your wife off, this is the verse that has the best advice for guys. It says, no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. And I think within that verse, Ephesians 5:29, the words nourish and cherish are some of the best things as guys we can do for our wife. Because the word cherish, if we start there, cherish is an attitude. Cherish says that I get how incredibly valuable you are. I get your value. You know, the God of this universe said that my wife is his treasured possession. I mean, that's value. But I don't always see it, especially when I'm mad at her, or we're fighting or disconnect or whatever. I lose sight of that. But if I want to sweep my wife off her feet, it starts by me noticing, wow, you are an amazing, valuable person. And then the nourish part is simply then putting that value into action. It's giving it legs. It's saying to her, hey, what are things that I can do that help you to feel loved, that help you to feel valued? When I do X, Y, and Z, whatever, what is it that helps you to feel, you know, cherished? And then she can give me this list. That's her love language. And see, then I've got it right there. I have my attitude, which is to cherish her, but then I can nourish her in ways that are unique to her. Because, again, she's got that built-in marriage manual. Tell me, Aaron, what you need from me that helps you to feel loved. And that's why, Susie, I agree. If we just did those two things, cherish and nourish, we would sweep our wife off her feet every time.
Yeah, and you could be married 20, 30, 40 years, and you can sweep her off once again. And those are the things that tend to go, aren't they?
They are, because I think because we all are so busy and we get shut down and whatever's going on in our life that we just quickly lose sight of how incredibly valuable our spouse is. And when I don't see how valuable she is, I'm not going to treat her in valuable ways. Mm. So there I lose the nourish and the cherish right there. And all I have to do is recapture that sense of, wow, you are amazing, and I therefore want to treat you as the priceless treasure that you are. So help me to understand how to do that best.
Wow, beautifully said. Just have about a minute left before I'm going to ask you to pray, but I want to turn it around. And what's one or two things every woman can and should do for her husband to make him feel like he can, you know, leap mountains in a single bound?
Yeah. Well, don't scare him in the middle of the night. Okay. But I think what it is, it's the same thing. I mean, it's the exact same advice, is that it's so easy for women to get frustrated with her man because we're messing up all the time. Remember and recapture, write down a list of why you really value and cherish your husband. Give him that list. And then ask him, hey, what are some things that I could do to encourage you, to help strengthen you, to help you to feel loved? What do I do that helps you to feel loved? And when he gives her that list as well, then she can then, again, tailor the way that she loves him according to what he really likes. And again, I think we both then walk away feeling valued and cherished and nourished.
Wow, Greg, priceless advice. This has been so fun, and it's gone much too fast. But as we wrap up, I'm wondering if you would pray for that marriage represented, that person listening whose marriage needs a revival. Would you pray?
Yeah, absolutely. Lord, we pray right now that we can learn how to honor, Lord, our marriage. As you said, that marriage should be honored by all. And so, Lord, maybe today, give us one clear insight on how we could better cherish each other, Lord. Give us a vision and help us remember that we married someone amazingly valuable, Lord. And then also help us to understand how to nourish each other as you've done for us. And Lord, that takes conversation, and it's a willingness to put myself out there to ask my wife, Lord, help us to do that. Lord, teach us how to nourish and to cherish each other today. And we know that this is a way that we can honor what you've created, Lord, and that's marriage. And we thank you for these things, Lord, and pray these things in your name. Amen.
Amen. Well, we love you, Greg. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
Always good to be with you. The title of the great book is The Wholehearted Marriage, Fully Engaging Your Most Important Relationship. I'm going to leave you with this passage from 1 Corinthians 13, verses 2 through 7. Listen to this. If I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. Well, may God bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and give you peace. Remember this, you're the object of his great love. And may you live up to that high privilege in him. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of this interview up on our website at faithradionet.com. Just wait a few minutes. That podcast will be up. I want you to share it with a friend. Do that for me. Be a radio missionary. This talk with Greg today will nourish plenty of marriages if you just click that button and send it out. Tune in tomorrow for the weekend edition of Live the Promise. I'll be talking with Linda Dillo about her book, What's It Like to Be Married to Me? And Other Dangerous Questions. You know what? It's going to be a great show, so I hope you don't miss it. That's 1 to 2 o'clock tomorrow, right after Dr. Bill Meyer Live on this same Faith radio station. Finally, guess what? The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and he's the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great, great weekend.